97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Good morning to you. We made it to Friday. Happy you could be here with us. And it is a going to be a gorgeous day, I think. We got the rain out of the way yesterday. The Cardinals won. The Blues won on the road. Hopefully tonight in March Madness, my team wins, and then I'll be happy. I can relax for the until the next game on Sunday.
Which team do you like again?
I'm trying to remember. Is it Tennessee? No, no, because nothing sucks like a big orange. So it must be Kentucky.
Is that the running joke in Kentucky? You guys think that's funny?
I think that's
funny. Are they rivals?
Longtime rivals. Oh. Of course, they're border states.
This is not, obviously, it's a Sweet 16.
They're border states.
But so this is a bigger game beyond what I already thought.
We have never met in the Sweet 16 before, ever. We've never met. We've met many times. Obviously, we play a couple times a year. We did beat them both times this season. They had some injuries. We had some injuries. We'll see what happens tonight. It'll be a different game.
Tennessee's pretty good.
Well, they're favored, I suspect. They're
but
higher
isn't it
seeded.
Like a 2 and a 3 seed? It's
something
not like
that.
It's that big of a difference.
Right. Right.
Well, good luck to
Thank you.
Kentucky Wildcats.
I appreciate that. Looking forward to that. Should be a fantastic weekend. We got lots to get to for you here this morning. By the way, Kim, I assume you're going to the luncheon today at 11:30. You did get the invite, right?
What luncheon?
March 28th. My friend Scott just sent this to me, and I was unaware of it. But you do have a chance this morning at 11:30. You can attend lunch with Chicago Socialist Mayor Brandon Johnson. He's in St. Louis to raise money for Tashar Jones.
Wow, I'll clear my schedule.
Brandon Johnson and Tashar Jones are having lunch today at the Levels Nigerian Cuisine on Washington Avenue across the street over here from the radio station.
Sorry to break it to you, but I think it's a day late and a dollar short.
I don't know. I mean, when you can bring in a socialist mayor from your neighboring state to raise money for you, that's got to mean something, right? I
wonder. Not him. People don't care enough about him. You need to bring in a big wig.
Now, Kara Spence will be walking a thin line there, but maybe she could go to there and stand in the back of the restaurant with some sunglasses on and just stare at them.
Well, it wasn't awkward at all when Tashara did that. I thought it was really effective and not creepy at all.
Wow. Wow. Somebody, one of the first comments was, sorry, I have a root canal scheduled. I can't make it.
Sorry, I'd rather have my teeth pulled without any sort of pain medication. Darn, I can't make it. Things you should tell us on social media, wherever you're watching, X, Rumble, Facebook, things you'd rather do than having to go to that luncheon.
With Brandon Johnson, an individual who hates America and the capitalist system that it is, and Tashar Jones, who wants you to reelect her as mayor of St. Louis. All right, we've been getting lots of questions about the Mark Cox voter guide for April. Obviously, the election is upon us, April 8th. Early voting has already started. That document is in the hands of the lovely and talented Tricia Everdeen. And I've just gotten an email from her telling me she's hoping to get that posted for me this morning. She's going to send me a link when it's ready. So before the end of the day, on my Facebook page, The Mark Cox Show, and on the station's page, 971talk.com, the Mark Cox voter guide will be up there with all of the caveats attached that I can't cover every race. And if your school district is not listed under school board races,
it's because he doesn't care.
It's because I just don't care. No, it's just because I didn't know of a candidate worthy of my endorsement in a lot of these races. And if they're an NEA endorsed candidate, they're automatically out. They're excluded because of the, if you are supported by the Missouri NEA, guess what? You by association support the radical DEI anti-gun policies of the NEA. And you are not going to vote in the best interest of my children. So that's why you're automatically excluded if you choose to accept an endorsement from the NEA. They can't run from it. Mm-hmm. They can claim they're not the same organization, but they're an affiliate of the National Education Association and Randy Weingarten and all of the negativity that comes with that. So that you take your choice and you state your claims. And a little later in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to have Randy Cook in here in studio. He is running for re-election out of the Francis Howell School District. And we're going to talk about some of the issues facing them. And, of course, the voter guide. Randy will be in my voter guide as well. All right, coming up, Jim Carafano, retired Lieutenant Colonel J.J. Carafano is going to join us, we hope, here in a few minutes. Of course, he has served our nation admirably. He's now at the Heritage Foundation. He's an expert on these national security issues, I should say. And we'll just get his thoughts on Signal. We haven't heard from him yet on it, so anxious to get him on 20 after. Then we got Congressman Eric Burleson. He's up there introducing bills and trying to save us money. What happens with this reconciliation bill? They're apparently trying to put a debt limit increase in there. I want to find out if he's in favor of that or what he thinks our reaction should be to all of that for you. Right now, Carl, I want to get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
We're at war, and the things that happened in the last 72 hours, if you don't understand we're in political warfare, you're not awake.
Yep, Steve Bannon's like, hey, you need to wake up. This is a repeat of what happened in 2016. It may have taken them a few extra weeks to get the ball rolling, but they will do their best to try to get a victory in Congress in a year and a half so that they can completely stymie everything Donald Trump's trying to accomplish.
The big three so-called American companies, GM, Ford, Stellantis, they're not really American companies. They have
General Motors isn't an American company?
Yeah, Peter Navarro, they're schooling Casey Hunt over on CNN. General Motors, a Ford is not an American company? Well, it's an American-owned company, but more than 50% of a lot of their products and parts are coming in here from overseas. Why not produce them in the United States, says Peter Navarro, and gets a round of applause from none other than the UAW president, Sean Fain.
United Auto Workers Union, Sean Fain, who wasn't the greatest fan of the president on the campaign trail, came out this morning and applauded the president for this move.
Thank you, Caroline Levitt, for pointing that out, mainly because Sean Fain's never going to long-term support Republicans, but it's a major poke in the side to the Democratic Party, who he's been a member of and supporter of up until now.
So the borders remain the same for the past 2 years. Thousands of people have died every week for nothing. For what?
Elon Musk last night, speaking to Brett Baer, pretty eye-opening interview with Elon Musk, I thought. I don't know if you saw that or not, Kim, but they talked about Doge. They talked about him referring to Mark Kelly, the senator from Arizona, as a traitor. And they asked him about it last night. He didn't back down. He goes, listen, he's putting the interests of another country before America. Bottom line. And he needs to come over here and have that debate in America and not go over to Ukraine and try to influence American foreign policy. And, you know, I think regardless of what you think about what's going on in Ukraine and regardless of what you think about how evil Vladimir Putin is, he makes a really good point here about what's going on there, about where the borders are, where they were 2 years ago and where they are today. Nothing's changed. The only thing that's changed is that tens of thousands of people have died. Listen.
I take great offense at those who put the appearance of goodness over the reality of it. Those who virtue signal and say, oh, we can't give in to Russia, but have no solution to stopping thousands of kids dying every day. They just want that to continue forever. I have contempt for such people. I don't want to make that clear.
Yeah.
So you're optimistic. Because they're virtue signaling, and their lack of a solution means that kids don't have a father. It means that parents lost a son. For what? Nothing.
Yeah, I think he's right. If the war ended today, the border situation's not going to be any different than it was 2 years ago. The only difference is thousands more people wouldn't die. And it's a reality check that a lot of people don't want to hear. And Elon is absolutely right. It'll cause the left to hate him that much more. But the point is that this thing needs time for it to come to an end. And Biden did absolutely nothing. All right. We're going to get to a break. Jim Carafano on the other side from Heritage. We'll have him put on his Lieutenant Colonel cap again and tell us what he thinks about the Signal controversy with Pete Hegseth and the other folks in the DNI. We're going to be back in just a minute.
As I said to this group a couple of times on this trip now, as we move to the Indo-Pacific to do our job, which is what we're here to do, nobody's texting war plans. Well, I noticed this morning out came something that doesn't look like war plans. And as a matter of fact, they even changed the title to attack plans because they know it's not war plans. There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information.
You know, I was born in the South. South Bronx.
All right, great to have Jim Carafano back with us from Heritage. Jim, how are you doing?
I am living the dream, my friend.
Living the dream. I love it. Lieutenant Colonel Carafano, could you give us your definition of war plans?
Yeah, this whole signal gate thing, to quote my white colonizer ancestor, William Shakespeare, is much ado about nothing. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of when they attacked Project 2025. It's, they just need, they got nothing. And so they're looking for something. And I think really they have really hit rock bottom to try to argue that this was some kind of massive compromise of war, of military operations, as if none of us knew we were bombing the Houthis. So I, as a guy who, you know, only has about, you know, 25 years of military experience and wrote war plans and knows what war plans are and has been doing military stuff for like 40 years, I ignored this story. Fortunately, I was overseas most of the time, so I didn't have to talk about it, but it is nonsense.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I wanted to play this bite real quick back to back so people can hear just how outraged Chuck Schumer is about Pete Hegseth right now. Listen.
He pointed fingers. He blamed the liberal media, moaned about hoaxes. Mr. Hegseth, this is not a hoax. It's very real and very serious. You should not be in your job.
Now, please compare and contrast that with Chuck Schumer's reaction after the Abbey Gate disaster, please.
Do you think it should have been handled any differently?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into pointing fingers right now. Job one, get the people home.
Yeah, very different there, don't you think, Jim?
The Democratic Party is at like 26% favorability. half the people in the Democratic Party want to fire Chuck Schumer. And so Chuck Schumer wants to talk about anything except the failings of his own party and Democratic governance. So, you know, it's the thing is, it's weird, right? Because we all get it. So, you know, it's, when we're watching a horror movie, we all know it's just a movie and that the kids are going in the basement. Not because kids are really that stupid, because that's what the script says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we all know what's going on here. I mean, the Democratic Party, and look, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. But literally, they're just failing. And they're saying stuff that even they know is complete and utter nonsense because they have nothing else to say.
So, Jim, in your mind, what would have needed to be included in those text messages on Signal for it to be considered war plans?
I can't imagine what you could cram into a text. So normally it's things that would put people at risk or compromise the success of military operations, right? So if, for example, if, you know, FDR called up, or, you know, FDR had, you know, basically wrote a letter to, Churchill and said, hey, you know, we're going to attack on June 6th, you know, on D-Day, you know, something like that would be meaningful, but there's nothing in there that the Houthis could exploit or that would compromise American or allied military lives. So it just doesn't even pass the laugh test.
Wow. Yeah. How about how Pete Hegseth's doing so far? How would you rate his job so far as SecDef?
Well, you know, I've known Pete a long time, and he's a good friend. And I always said, look, this is not a guy who has a lot of experience in how every little office in the Pentagon runs. He's not somebody who spent a lot of time on the Hill working with Congress, you know, pushing on defense plans. But what he is an incredibly inspiring leader who is both morally and patriotic, the kind of leader that we want to motivate young men and women in the military. And he brings an attribute to the role that I think we haven't had in such a long time.
Oh, yeah.
A person that people in the military can look up to and say, yes, we understand this person wants to lead us and get things done. You know, we're even seeing this in the FBI, where I think a lot of people were very skeptical about Kash Patel, and they hear all these terrible things. But I think the rank and file in the FBI look, oh, this is a guy who wants us to succeed. And what he cares about is us and our mission. And I tell you, somebody who's in the military, that's the most inspiring and important thing for me. I can forgive a lot of things. You don't have to be the world's greatest expert, but the drive and the commitment are there. And, you know, so I think he's doing an unbelievably strong job. Talked to a lot of allies who met him, and when they meet him, they come away and have said, this is a strong leader, and we get it, and we're pleased with the choice of president.
Yep, and the enlistment numbers reflect that as well. Jim, we appreciate your time as always. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too, buddy.
All right, see you soon. J.J. Carafano there. All right, we're going to get to a quick break here. We got the Capitol Beat with Congressman Eric Burleson coming up, and we'll get his take on that reconciliation bill. We'll be right back.
Capitol Beat.
All right, we welcome in Congressman Eric Burleson to the show this morning. Did you like that bump music, Congressman? I just have to ask.
I don't know what it was.
It's okay to say no. Don't worry.
It's Mammoth W. Van Halen. It's Wolfgang Van Halen, Eddie's son.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Carl uses it as penalty music for the Blues when they're playing, apparently, over
it says,
at Enterprise
don't
Center.
Don't back down.
I love it. I got to pick all the bump music for my own show this morning, which is why I'm bragging there, Congressman. Sorry. It's my own show, and it's a special treat when I get to pick my own bump music.
Of showing, you know, some flair.
Don't you wish that when you walked onto the House floor that you guys got to pick, like, walkout music for each member of Congress got to pick their song?
Don't tempt us. I mean, with the egos in Congress, that would happen.
What would your walkout music be? Have you ever given it any thought?
Oh, I mean, it would be hard to not pick Welcome to the Jungle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that would be good.
I have really fond memories of Mark McGuire coming to the plate with that.
Nice.
So
I love it. Yeah, plus maybe Welcome to the Swamp, right? We could roll you out with that.
Right. Welcome to the Swamp.
Well, we love getting you on here on Friday mornings to talk about what's going on up there in D.C. And I know, among other things, everybody's losing their mind over this signal thing. I just wanted to get your take on it. I mean, I think it's a big nothing burger, but what's the feeling in the halls of Congress?
I think it's a big nothing burger. Let's compare this. Like, this is the media is melting down. And the question I want to ask is, did 13 Marines die because of a mistake from the Pentagon?
Yeah.
Did we leave behind, you know, tens of billions of dollars in military grade equipment to terrorists? No. This was a mistake that was, thank goodness, a harmless mistake. And, you know, it was a successful mission. That's what the story should be, is that. Is that, hey, guess what? We successfully did what Joe Biden wasn't able to do in 4 years, and that's take down the Houthis. So I think that should have been the story, not nitpicking the fact that there was that some of the information was inadvertently given to a reporter. Look, the Biden administration overtly gave information to reporters. Yeah. Milley overtly, you know, leaked information to China to try to undermine Donald Trump. So this is night and day.
So do members of Congress use Signal or a similar app for any sort of communication, or is it just the cabinet members?
I'll tell you, when being an oversight and you meet with whistleblowers and other people, they only want to communicate through Signal. So if that gives you an idea, if they trust it, it sounds like it's a pretty secure app. But we're protected under under speech and debate laws. We're not like the executive branch. Like our communications related to speech and debate are protected. So okay. we can use a signal chat. I could use Facebook Messenger if I wanted to, but for communications. And honestly, as a member, just to kind of give you an idea, if it was illegal, you couldn't stop it, because I get messages from people from LinkedIn, from Facebook, from everything you can possibly imagine. People figure out a way to send a message to you and for your role. So that's kind of how it works.
Yeah. We're talking to Congressman Eric Burleson this morning. You know, I love that the DOGE subcommittee got the CEO of NPR and PBS on this week. This was Catherine Mayer while she was testifying here.
First of all, I do want to say that NPR acknowledges that we were mistaken in failing to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story more aggressively and sooner. Our current editorial leadership
in Wuhan.
We recognize that we were reporting at the time, but we acknowledge that the new CIA evidence is worthy of coverage and have covered it.
Boy, what a slap in the face to Americans whose taxpayer dollars are going to NPR and PBS when you find out that even the people in charge of it claim not to realize the amount of bias that comes out of that so-called news organization.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Jordan did a very good job of identifying, making them admit that they had 87 editorial staff, and that all 87 were registered Democrats.
Yes.
You couldn't find that in any sample of any population in America, except the NPR editorial board. So we are funding the left. We're funding an organization that hates us and competes with you. Right.
Yeah, right.
They're taking your money and they're spinning a leftist narrative and competing with you. And so I think that it's long time that we, acknowledge the fact that it's no longer needed. Even there was in my 5 minutes, I made the point that there was a time in history when we paid town criers. Okay. There was a time when people couldn't read, and before the Gutenberg press, where people would go to the street and read out loud because the public couldn't read, and that was state sponsored speech. We don't do that anymore. And why don't we? Because everybody can get access to the news through so many mediums. So to me, I said, NPR and PBS are the modern day town criers. We need to get rid of it.
I was listening to Fox News Radio this morning on my way into the studio, and they were talking about how a number of people since Trump has taken office have been self-deporting, with Kristi Noem out there and Tom Homan kind of sending this stern warning, like, get out, we will find you. Have you heard any numbers on that? Because my understanding is they're using the app that the Biden administration put in to get people into our country quicker. They're now using that to try to get people out to self-deport. Do you know how many people have done that? Are there numbers floating around Congress you guys have heard?
I have not heard numbers yet, but I think it's going to be a significant number, because especially if we're setting up a scenario where we say, get out now and there won't be any punishment. And that's been their message. And they've submitted some great videos saying this. If you get out now, and then whenever you get back in line, if you want to come back, there'll be a way, you won't be harmed or hindered in your efforts to come back.
Yes.
In other words, if you get it to get in line, but if you don't get out and we have to deport you, you're not coming back. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a message that's going to motivate a lot of people.
Yeah. Congressman Eric Burleson with us this morning. Sorry, I stepped on you there. On reconciliation, I've heard a lot about that bill and that Mike Johnson is trying to put a debt limit increase in it. Are all members on board with that in the conservative caucus?
Ironically, I mean, we're not huge fans of the fact that we're having to raise the debt ceiling. To me, it's admitting that we're a failure. But what would be worse, and the reason why if it's going to happen, I would rather it happen in reconciliation. Because if it happens outside of reconciliation, we have to get Chuck Schumer and 10 votes or 7 votes out of the Democrats, right?
Yes.
So that's going to, and what they will do is they will exact a pound of flesh from Trump and Republicans in order to get those votes. And I think that if it's so, the debt ceiling is going to end up getting raised anyway. We might as well do it without having to give away a bunch of things to the Democrats. And what I'm demanding is a lot of spending cuts in this. So while we might not be able to balance the budget immediately today, if we can at least start bending the curve so that we put ourselves on a better path to balancing the budget, then we're at least we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, that's I support that wholeheartedly. Congressman Burleson, listen, have a great weekend. Thank you for giving us some time today.
Thank you. You too.
Yep, we'll talk soon. Appreciate that. We'll work on that walk-up music for you next time. How about that?
Maybe we need walk-up music.
I love that.
Yeah, I know you'd pick.
I'd pick on Standing on Top of the World by Van Halen. I think that would be a good one, Carl, for a walk-up. No doubt. All right, coming up, what are we getting to on Kim and a Whim?
We've been talking about how Anheuser-Busch pulled its support from the Pride St. Louis, that big festival coming up. Well, now Pride St. Charles had actually its biggest sponsor just dropped.
Oh, well, we'll have that in just a minute. Stay tuned.
Kim on a Whim.
We were talking about how Anheuser-Busch dropped its sponsorship, its support, its 30-year-long support from Pride Fest. It's coming up this summer in about a month and a half, 2 months. And now Pride St. Charles is dealing with the same issue. So they've launched a fundraising campaign to try to save this year's Pride Festival that's supposed to happen on June 14th because they're saying Procter & Gamble, which I guess is the festival's largest sponsor, and other key partners have completely dropped.
Really?
This is spreading.
P&G pulled their support as well.
This is spreading like wildfire where a lot of these companies are maybe finally feeling brave enough, like they're in a position to say, you know what, we're not going to do it. Now, what I will say is different about this. Anheuser-Busch just said, we're not going to sponsor you and has not said it plans to go for any other local Pride Festival. Supposedly, Pride St. Charles said that P&G came to them and said, you know, we'd really like to support other local prides, and that's why we're not going to give to you. So it'll be interesting to see if they then put their support behind maybe
other prides.
St. Louis Pride Fest after AB dropped.
Like other local Pride Fests in the St. Louis area.
That's what I'm under. I mean, that's how I read it.
Okay.
So.
See, I think maybe the tendency here, the knee-jerk reaction to this story has been that, well, they're anti-LGBT. Now they'll be accused of being anti-LGBTQ because they don't pour out money for this. But I wonder how many other, like, politically, like, are they still contributing to BLM? Because my guess is a lot of these big corporate boards have donated millions of dollars so Patrice Cullors could go own multi-million dollar homes. I think two of her homes burned in L.A. And this is a woman who went from nothing to a multi-millionaire because of BLM. Because these companies, just like Jesse Jackson used to do back in the day, they would come to him in the Rainbow Coalition and say, you're either going to support us or we're going to boycott your organization. So these companies were almost blackmailed into doing it. It strikes me that maybe many of them have gotten the message after Dylan Mulvaney's situation at Bud Light and some of the others. Maybe we should stick to what we do best, supporting sports in America, the people that drink our beer, the people we know are drinking our beer, and that's who we're going to throw our money behind, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's possible. My guess is if you could look at the budget over at Anheuser-Busch, they probably did this to a lot of groups. It's just the LGBTQ Pride Festival is the one getting all the headlines
right
by the media because they're the sweethearts of the media.
The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Right.
That's the saying.
Right.
The vice president of Pride St. Charles is quoted in the Channel 4 article saying, this Pride Festival is an essential event for our community, and without the necessary resources, we risk losing a vital opportunity to show up for each other and for the LGBTQIA plus people who need to feel seen, heard, and valued. Now, maybe I'm just a cynic, but I don't remember them having, like, I need to feel seen. I feel like a hippo right now. I would like a white women's pregnancy type festival because I want to feel seen.
Well, call the CEO at Anheuser-Busch and see if they got any extra of that money laying around.
Maybe they'd sponsor it. Because I don't think I'm going to feel seen unless I have sponsors. I think I need a festival. I think I need the vendors there. I need someone to pay for the balloons. Because otherwise, if we were just to gather and, you know, show support for one another in solidarity, that it just wouldn't be enough for me. I need the food.
I think you were truly marginalized.
I am. Thank you.
We need to bring in food trucks and we need to acknowledge the music. So I know that it's your tradition, and now that you think that you have a right to do this every year, and you have a right to huge corporate sponsors supporting you to do this every year, but you don't. You don't have a right to those things. And if the money's not there, guess what? Have a party in the park.
Right.
You can get a permit for a little bit of nothing. Just tell everybody, show up on this day. The food trucks will come because they want to sell food. Mm-hmm. The beer trucks will come because they want to sell beer. And it'll be the same thing. What's the difference?
And I'm sure that
Except you need it to be a spectacle. That's the difference.
I'm sure other people will step up and donate. Private donors probably will. You know, like restaurants, for example. The restaurants here in St. Louis, Steve's Hot Dogs, Fox, Gray Fox Pub, whatever it's called, they're donating at least 50%, if not all of its proceeds, to Pride Fest in St. Louis. So that's what will likely happen in St. Charles, is you'll have those businesses or big private donors who will feel really bad that they lost the biggest sponsor, and they'll say, you know what, I'm going to make up for that money. So I don't really feel like this is going to be a major issue as far as funding.
They need the headline to get the attention, and then somebody else will step forward probably and get behind them on this. So it's just a matter of time, right? I think much ado about nothing, but it's a headline grabber, and the people that need attention will end up getting it.
Will you sponsor my pregnant women, white pregnant women? I think I need my own.
Let me assemble the board and take that under advisement. Okay.
Just consider it. I appreciate that.
Just how big of a portion of my audience you represent.
It doesn't really matter. Who cares about that? I want to feel seen, Mark.
All right, back in just a minute, we're going to talk more about the school board races, the very important races coming up, this time in the Francis Howell School District, right at the top of the hour.
Get more at 971talk.com.